Hey, we're going to be reviewing a piece in the New York Times, and Kathy Burns is with me to help with this because she had, 16 years?
14.
14 years.
I'm not that heroic.
Well, 14 years in the public school system is pretty heroic.
Well, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And, I mean, education in Iowa has been a big thing. In fact, it was our state quarter, leader in education, mm-hmm. I think was the motto on the quarter years ago. But this piece raises a lot of concerns, and I want to just kind of read through it, and then we can stop and, you know, and discuss it as we move along.
Okay.
Anyway, it's an editorial that's referencing work by a reporter named Gia Lin. The numbers are staggering. Nearly one in four 17-year-old boys in the U.S. has attention deficit hyperactive disorder, ADHD. I mean,
well,
it's disturbing, but my thought is ADHD is actually a normal condition, that we aren't meant to sit still forever, all day long, doing the same task.
Technically, there is a difference between wanting to move your body on a regular basis and the inability to be still for a certain amount of time. So I think what you're saying is that yes, we need to be up and active, and that's the best way to learn things. But
especially for younger kids.
But we really don't have any data on whether these conditions, hyperactivity, attention deficit, in other words, just wanting to think of other things than what's being presented, whether they've always existed, and if they've affected children and families for years, without kind of categorizing it as something we could help people with, or something we could, information that we could use to reform education to more accommodate children who don't sit still well, and I'm one of those.
Yeah, well, you and me both. So the editorial continues. In the early 1980s, a diagnosis of autism was delivered to one child in every 2,500. That figure now is one in every 31. Almost 32% of adolescents have at some point been given a diagnosis of anxiety. More than one in 10 have experienced a major depressive disorder. Your thoughts on that? I mean, there's a bunch of different things thrown together.
This article does focus on the school system and its impact on children's mental health overall. However, in response to those data, I would say that there's a lot more that children feel stressed and confused about than just what's happening at school and the structure of the public school system. There's economics, there's the lack of families to, whether it's a one parent, two parent, whatever kind of family it is, to be home with the children on a regular basis. We work ourselves to death in this country because of the economic system, the social expectations. And so I wouldn't just blanket that all of that data and say we need to figure out how the school system is causing this.
And I'm not sure the author of the piece intends to do that. Mm-hmm. The piece continues, why did this happen? A lot of reasons. Kids spent hours on screens, cutting into their sleep, exercise, and socializing. Mm-hmm. Activities that can ward off anxiety and depression. Mental health screenings have improved.
Yes.
So two things there.
Yes.
Screen time, bad. Mental health screenings,
good.
Better, good. Yeah. The piece continues, and then there's school itself, a cause of stress for many children, and the very place it sends them toward a diagnosis. And we can read more about what they say about that, but your initial take, maybe that's being too hard on schools?
I'll backtrack with a little note that being a public educator, an educator of any kind of our precious children, is a nearly impossible task to do successfully all the time. And educators face scrutinization, criticism, and they also get some kudos. But when you think about the stress on the teachers to accomplish all that they're expected to do in a day, it's not surprising that some of this also affects the children and their learning. Every child has a different learning style, and teachers are expected to teach to the style of learning. And with you know, 15, 20 more children in a classroom, you can kind of categorize different learning styles as someone who's more tactile, someone who's more visual, and that's a very generic way to look at it. But that stress alone and the teacher's ability to accommodate that or not can also make the school system feel stressful for the kids.
Yeah, and let me read more from the piece because I think it gets into an element that feeds right into what you're just talking about there. So in 1950, less than half of American children attended kindergarten. I was one of them. Only about 50% graduated from high school. After school hours were filled with play or work, but as the country's economy shifted from factories and farms to offices, being a student became a more serious matter. The outcome of your life could depend on it. College became a reliable path to the middle class, and schools leaned into the new standards of testing and put in place, for example, No Child Left Behind. That was in 2002. And I one teacher friend of mine called it No Teacher Left Standing. But the whole idea is that, you know, we have to have, this is kind of related to my previous conversation with Brittany, this need for national standards, for standardizing everything, for finding a way to measure it, to make it easy and convenient for people who want to analyze data. And is that kind of what's happened with No Child Left Behind?
Very much so. I think No Child Left Behind was the culmination of the previous years-long pressure on schools to respond to the business world, the academic world, the world that wants kids to be ready for jobs. The corporate world, either when they graduate high school or when they, quote, go to college. And for a long time, trade schools were left out of secondary education or higher education learning. All of that pressure then was part of, you know, the No Child Left Behind then was established as part of the public demand for schools to get kids ready to work and ready to produce and ready to be part of our community. But the developing the child as a whole was left behind. That's what was left behind. Yeah. All the children were left behind.
And to remind people, I mean, Nickleby, No Child Left Behind, was co-sponsored by two politicians that I happen to like.
I'm sure.
Ted Kennedy on the Democratic side and John McCain on the Republican side.
They had good intentions, but I'm sure they were responding to a demand that presented what seemed to be rational ideas without looking at the needs of the business community and the corporate world instead of the needs of the children to develop into the people they will become.
That to me is the underlying problem with facing public education right now, is the demands that the corporate community have placed.
Thank you for acknowledging that, because a lot of people say the problem with public education. And public education is so near and dear to my heart. I mean, all children deserve the same chances and chances that fit their needs, not just, nothing against, you know, private education, that's great. But to put so much blame on public education for the woes of the world right now and the woes of America right now is extremely brutal.
So back to the New York Times piece. States rewarded schools for having high scores. They punished schools for low ones. Schools were treated more like publicly traded companies with test scores as proxies for profits. Before long, schools had public ratings so ubiquitous they now appear on real estate listings. I mean, that says it all right there.
It does. And the way the scores were tallied and presented was not by these tests. What was important to the outcomes was not the raw scores of the student. In other words, if you took a test and you got 75% of the things on it right, you were not granted, and the schools were not granted, how well are the kids doing overall, but how do they compare with all the other schools in percentiles?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if your school ranks in the 50th percentile, it's doing better than 50% of the other schools, and then all the schools get better equally the next year, that school will not look like it raised its its quality of education or outcomes at all. If the kids start performing at 75% or 90% of the questions answered right, and all the other schools did the same thing, that first school will still be in the 50th percentile, looking like they're not growing and learning.
Let me continue with the editorial. And there were clear incentives to diagnose students with psychiatric disorders. Treatment of one student, especially a disruptive one, could lead to higher test scores across the classroom. And in some states, the test scores of students with a diagnosis weren't counted toward a school's overall marks, nudging results higher as well. Was that your experience?
There were students who, if they could be qualified as having a condition that kept them from achievement at that time in their lives in the school system, yes, they were allowed to be excluded from the overall school reporting so that they wouldn't pull the average down for everybody
else. So which again, as the piece says, encourage the use of diagnoses.
That maybe. Mm. I mean, incentives, maybe motivation. I'm not sure. That seems a little harsh, but I never saw a lot of students willy-nilly being labeled or diagnosed as something but I did see students whose scores were pulled out.
Right. Well, to continue the effect, the piece writes about the effect on kids. The pressures on students became extreme. In 2020, Yale researchers found that nearly 80% of high schoolers said they were stressed. And that stress has trickled down to younger and younger kids. Kindergartners learn best through play, not through the rote lessons in math and reading that began to enter classrooms. Preschoolers are not predisposed to sitting still. And yet, as they too now face greater academic expectations, many are being expelled for misbehavior. Even the school day became more regimented with fewer periods of recess. By 2016, only 8 states had mandatory recess in elementary schools. Class schedules are packed. You've got 7 different homework assignments that you've got to remember each night, one expert told the reporter. Think of the cognitive load of a 6th grade boy. I challenge many adults to do this.
All of that it speaks to truth. I do want to just think about some historical perspective on the demands of younger children. I'm thinking about my grandfather, who, you know, I'm writing a book about his life, and when he was taken in by a family at the age of 3, by the age of 6 or so, he was expected to toe the line for chores, for manners, for his religious education, and raised with a lot of stress and pressure, as a lot of other children were. So
A different kind of stress.
But I don't know if kids have more stress today, but that would be an interesting thing to really look into longitudinally.
Well, and there's a big time period between when your grandfather was dealing with that
in the late 1800s.
And, yes. And now the 1990, 2000, 2010s. And, I would say that, I didn't really like school as a kid.
I know. You talk about it a lot.
But you like school.
Yes, I did. Even though I don't sit still well, I was very good behavior oriented.
Yeah.
I wanted to please.
I didn't like school because I didn't like getting beaten by nuns.
No.
And also, I found the curriculum in high school extremely boring and irrelevant. But I wouldn't say that it stressed me, like I see the analysis of today.
I had kind nuns by junior high and high school when I was in public education. I enjoyed learning because I had an exceptional environment for learning, Harlan Community High School, Harlan Community Schools in general. And I had a group of friends who challenged each other to do well, and we were excited about learning together. Mm. And I don't know if that's, and it wasn't necessarily a small school. We had 200 or so in my graduating class, but it was an active learning environment with a lot of great extracurriculars. So I had a very different experience.
I'm jealous, but it seems to me like even that is slipping away. Nowadays.
Maybe. Yeah. I think it's a different pressure on kids to do something different than just learn and enjoy.
Well, interesting stuff. We could talk a lot more about this, but that's a good start. Kathy, thank you so much for helping to research this conversation.